Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchie. Joining me this week are our friends and returning champions from the Anime World Order podcast and Otaku USA Magazine, Daryl Surratt. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Great to be here again.
And, of course, Gerald Rathkelb is here as well. Hey, Gerald.
Hey, nice to be here again, too.
Okay, yeah, it's been about like 8 or 9 months since we've had you guys on the show. And so how are you guys doing? Daryl, how's it going?
I've been pretty busy. Right now I'm writing for Otaku USA. I'm also doing some other projects as well. We've got anime conventions coming up. I've got a ton of stuff to do for Anime Boston, which is the next one. Plus, we've got this whole new season of anime that's just started. And shock of shocks, this time I've actually got stuff to watch.
It's rare, right? It's not common that something comes out that actually passes your muster.
Well, for the last season, it was a little bad, but usually there's at least one or two things for me to watch. But right. Last time, almost nothing. Maybe one show.
I liked a couple of things.
This season is looking pretty decent, like, so far. I mean, it's way too early for me to tell, but yeah.
I can always tell based on what the average score is in the preview guide, and this time it's 3, leaning towards a 3.5. Even the bad stuff doesn't seem that bad. I don't know if we're just getting used to it, but yeah. I was expecting to really hate that My Ordinary Life show, Nichijo or whatever it is. It's actually not bad. I thought it was kind of cute. I laughed a couple of times, which is, if a show like that gets 2 laughs out of me, it's revolutionary. So
that's the shelf life scale.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I gave it like, I don't think I'm going to watch more of it, but the fact that it wasn't repulsive and it was actually kind of funny and was more concerned with making you laugh than giving you something to jerk off to, that's something. But so what's been impressing you so far?
I'll start with Gerald, I guess, since I think we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, I'm actually watching a couple of things. I'm very interested in Kaiji. I watched the first season of that came out, years ago now, and so far it's looking, more of the same, which I'm happy with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the one I was looking forward to the most. I mean, they announced that second season once the first season ended, and it just got delayed and delayed and delayed.
That was 2 years ago or something?
2 or 3 years ago, and I couldn't wait, and I just read through the manga. And so I know what's going to happen now, but now it's like, now we want to see how they're going to pull off these multiple volumes worth of, a guy in his magnet or whatever it is that's going to go down in this season.
Yeah, it's a real shame that show, like, the only legit way to watch it was on Juiced some time ago, and then it just kind of disappeared.
I kind of was hoping that Funimation would maybe pick that up. Maybe they might, but so far nothing. So the only way you can really watch that is on the gray area fan sub zone.
Right, right. And outside of that, I'm also watching. I can't say I'm watching. I checked out. I guess outside of that, Tiger and Bunny, which.
That one came out of nowhere and surprised
me. Yeah,
I mean,
the name of it, if I just heard, like, Tiger and Bunny, I'd be like, what the hell? I'm not watching that show.
Is that another Penny and Stocking? Like, what is it,
But Tiger and Bunny, from what I saw, looks pretty excellent. I can see how they could ruin the show, but I don't think they're going to do it. So I got my fingers crossed. That show looks pretty sweet so far.
Yeah, I do have faith in it.
It was off my radar too until some people that work for us that live in Japan and work with the studios over there started giving me sort of a heads up, like, "Hey, this show is probably going to be pretty good." And they told me the title, and I was like, "That sounds like a big load of bullshit. Why did they call it that?" And I still think the title is the biggest barrier of entry, and they would have. I hope. If it does come out over here on TV or on DVD or something, change the name to something a little bit more palatable, please. Because yeah. I think it has the potential to be like a Cowboy Bebop style hit. I really do. They really made it for that Adult Swim, midnight, open to anime kind of crowd. And it's got a Western sensibility to it that really works. I mean, when I saw the first episode, I was like, oh, this is it. They finally got this. They finally made something else like this with a real tight script, great characters, funny, good satire, nice premise. The show just works. and especially for I think for a Western fan. So I'm really hoping that that takes off and has the and has what potential I see in it. At least I hope so. I really don't know. It's impossible to know how these things are going to go down these days.
Yeah, the trouble with anime. Kind of, well, it's not Gonzo. It's Sunrise.
No,
yeah.
I was just going to say Gonzo has entrenched me in not trusting, you know, not judging a show too early in its run. So
yeah, so many anime now that they the way they produce these things is they just kind of do the first couple and then wing it after maybe three episodes. I've gotten to the point where I'm so paranoid about shows having promise and then turning bad that I usually don't want to watch them, but I am going to watch Tiger and Bunny all the way through as it comes out each week on Hulu.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I think it's kind of a no brainer. It feels like this is the sort of thing we've been bitching that they haven't been making.
Yeah,
and I do want to see it succeed if it at least stays the quality that the first two episodes have been at.
And I got to say, like, the thing that I've been complaining about most in anime has been the writing for the last boils down to the writing for the last like 5 years probably. And this season, I'm finally starting to see what I consider to be decent writing again. Even the Sekai Ichi Hatsukoi, it's a BL show, but the writing's pretty solid, and that's what makes it good and watchable. The script is good, and this is not something that I've seen a lot of lately. You know, either it's unnecessary fantasy claptrap dialogue, like in that shitty Dog Days thing, or it's little girls doing cute things, and it's really boring and mundane and not funny. And now it feels like the writing's getting better. I don't know, maybe they just, switched gears or something, but I'm happy with what I'm seeing so far.
Maybe they sold as many as they could of panty jumpsuit flash, and
yeah,
they just can't go on anymore. I don't know.
I like how no matter what kind of like ridiculous, hypothetical, condescending title you come up with, it could conceivably be real. You have to double check and think, wait, is that a real show?
Yeah. If it's not, then you just somehow gave them an idea to produce it. But there is of course the big repulsive one, which is Astaroth's toy.
I downloaded an episode of that.
I thought you were making that up when you wrote that description. I'm like, this show isn't real. You're just lying. And then I read the more reviews, and it's like, no, this is actually what the show is about.
You know, it's a conundrum because they lard it up with that premise, which I didn't even want to. Normally, when these things come out, I boil it down to what is this actually trying to sell you? Which, like, Kodomo no Jikan, little girl wants to fuck her teacher. That's what that show is ostensibly about. This show, I couldn't boil it down because we try to be family friendly, at least a little bit, in what shows up on ANN's front page. And in order to boil that premise down, it's, oh god, I don't even want to say it. I really didn't want to, but the premise for that show, and even though the show itself is executed in a completely benign, sort of generic fan service lolicon show, I mean, it is generic as it could be. It's
deleting that file right now.
Yeah, it stays away from there's panty shots and nudity and stuff. We all expect that kind of thing, but just when you describe what the actual premise of the show is, you can't get past it, and now that's like my new low bar. It's like if you pitch me a show, you're like, here's a new anime, and I'm like, well, does it have any 10-year-old demons who have to fillet men in order to live? Well, no, it doesn't. Okay, then. Let's see what it's about. So long as that shit's not in there. Oh, god, it just makes my flesh crawl. I can't believe they even executed something with that premise. But
oh, wow, I wish I'd read that summary before I downloaded that. Now I feel like I'm on some list somewhere.
Yeah, god. Chris Hansen is knocking at your door.
That's one of the reasons I didn't put that description in. Because my name is at the top of that page, you know, but it's ignorable. It's for its own crowd. And I was talking about mostly in the review I wrote, mostly I was saying this is a specialty product. It's for one specific audience that has very specific needs, I guess. And there's no point in even really reviewing it or even talking about it.
I agree. It's like the analogy has been made that the way that the anime industry is set up now is sort of akin to what if on American TV every single show had to have guys in drag trying to disguise the fact that they were actually guys, you know, 80s bosom buddies style, and if that had to dominate entertainment. You know, the moe thing is kind of like that. I mean, not all the fans of Japanese animation in Japan go for this stuff, but it's omnipresent virtually, and it's just really weird that that's kind of where everyone has to cater to now.
It's also weird because the audience in Japan is actually, like, very small, and that it can support that many shows like that.
Well, but that's kind of a misnomer, because not all of these shows are successes.
Yeah.
You have Lucky Star and K-On! And Haruhi Suzumiya, and those were the big hits. And the others, a lot of them fell on their face. I mean, we never saw... Some of these were intended to be franchises that never took off. If the Blu-ray sales are disappointing, then, you know, you're not going to really see much more of it on TV. It's... there's a lot of failure. But the ones that have been big hits made a lot of money. So they're still chasing that. They're chasing that dream. But I'm seeing more and more this season that seems like it's more for fans who like other things. It is a medium, not a genre, you know?
As we like to say.
Right.
Are there any other shows you guys are watching?
I really liked that Enmakun, the Demon Prince Enmakun thing.
The Gonagai one, yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty funny. Very different, because the first Enmakun I ever saw was with the Bandai Visual version that they put out, like the dark, adult, super gory OAVs that they were selling like $40 for two episodes.
Yeah, I was doing the research for this, because the minute the opening credits started, I'm like, okay, this is based on something old. So I went and looked it up in the encyclopedia, and if you click on the link for the 70s show, the 70s version, it's the real crude cartoon type, you know, Gonagai 1970s look. And then I clicked on the OVA, which I never saw, and I was like, oh, they decided to darken this up somewhat. I never saw that OVA, though, so it's like stereotypical, angsty, super dark, gory kind of thing.
Well, you know, it was one of those things, like a lot of that Gonagai stuff, like Devilman or whatever, they got that dark, super gory OAV version in the 90s. This Enma was a little later than that, but, you know, the fact that even you didn't even see it, and it was released in America, you know, kind of is testament to Bandai Visual's
inability
approach.
To do anything.
Yeah.
Constant implosion.
That was
the cartoon wasn't bad.
Was that released under the Oniyama's label?
Yes, it was.
Okay,
it was
one
of those.
I remember getting screeners in for it, but it immediately went out the door to some other reviewer. But yeah, it's a neat little show.
I do like that show.
It's really gorgeous, like really well animated for what it is. I don't know if
and
it's.
I actually thought it was pretty funny too. I mean, you know, it's pretty easy, even though it's like obviously, you know, a show for kids to get very annoying very fast. But so far, I'm entertained.
Yeah, I'm not surprised it didn't get picked up by anybody. I just think shows that look like that, they just don't move.
It's got that look, and it's got that kind of content, which means it's totally not suitable for children here in America. So who are you going to sell it to?
Yeah, it's kind of anathema to Western fans. I mean, some of us like that kind of thing, but it's just not. It's too much
it's
of a kid show.
Viable.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah. Did you guys watch Toriko?
Yes, I did. I saw that you were not a fan of it. I've next to Kaiji Season 2, this is actually the series I've been waiting for the anime to be made of for quite some time, just because it is pretty much, you know, in the top tier of Shonen Jump is maybe Naruto, Bleach, and One Piece. Toriko is hovering right just underneath that, or right on above, maybe parallel to. And the concerns about it are perfectly justifiable. You know, the premise of it is big, super muscular, manly man travels the world and, you know, murders animals and eats them. You know, in a crazy, you know, setting where, you know, meat literally grows on trees and, you know, there's waterfalls made out of honey and the world is just completely zany and nuts. And that's part of its actual appeal for me, is that it's so crazy. For the people who like One Piece, it fits in very well with that sort of aesthetic. The author is pretty good friends with the One Piece author. I actually think it's the best thing in Shonen Jump running, but I guess I'm in the minority on this particular podcast as far as that goes.
I'm kind of hoping that I can sort of get in on the Toriko thing, because I missed the boat heavily on the Naruto thing and the One Piece thing, and to just start those things now is such an immense task.
Yeah.
So, and I know Toriko is yet another one of those things that will just run for forever and ever, and if the TV series is popular, it'll be like 200 episodes. So...
Even
I don't
want
to get
that,
too behind on that. And it seems like a pretty interesting premise.
It is. And what strikes me about it that's so interesting that it caught on as a hit is, one, the fact that the author of the manga got another chance to do manga. I mean, do you know the story about this?
Mm-mm.
Okay, the guy who did this, he had a previous manga, was a fairly decent success, ran 18 volumes, until he went to jail for soliciting underage prostitution.
Okay.
And so, somehow, he does his time, he gets out, and he gets another chance. And he makes Toriko, and the manga is so good that no one can deny him, even though he's totally an ex-convict, the chance to make children's comic books.
Registered sex offender, right.
Yeah, pretty much. But, wow. It doesn't really bleed into the work. You wouldn't know that unless I told you. It was a surprise to me, too, when I read it. But, it's true.
You know, it's weird. My reaction to that show, it's not that I didn't enjoy the premise. I thought, the premise is what my problem with the show is. But it was really well made. I could see it being incredibly appealing to a lot of people. I can see why it's probably going to be a really big hit. The reason I said what I did is because even if you acknowledge all the show's qualities, would you honestly recommend it to somebody who, donates to the ASPCA and PETA and the Humane Society?
Review in Otaku USA, I straight up wrote, this is the cartoon PETA does not want you to see.
Right, and that's so me. That's me. I donate to those places. I'm a bleeding heart when it comes to animals. And so the reason I said what I did was just a warning to like-minded people. It really wasn't intended as a criticism.
Which is perfectly understandable. Yeah. I don't really see the people who are like, come on, Zach, it's not even a real crocodile or, whatever animal.
My response to that is I'm sorry you have absolutely no empathy for the way other people might feel. It's not a criticism. I'm just saying, I expected that. I 100% expected that response. And, people, playing at the fact that they're super manly because they like the show. And it's yeah, right. Okay, buddy.
To be fair, you also didn't like Catch at One for similar reasons, correct?
Well, Catch at One was badly made and the script sucked. But those issues aside, yeah, I don't really like seeing bunnies get shot, especially bunnies with realistic faces and stuff. It's not pleasant at all. I just don't want that in my entertainment. It's not entertaining to me.
Yeah, and I mean, we all bring that with us when we review things as well, so.
Yeah.
And as long as you're upfront about it and you say, with the disclaimer, this is what I think and your mileage may vary for that, then you're okay. I was going to just say, I think a lot of people, they want to see that sort of disclaimer applied to every single review. I personally don't really like watching little girls who have to, drain the life seed, as it were, from, animals to survive. But if you don't mind that sort of thing, and if you go down that road, you become overly condescending.
Well, you become overly condescending and your reviews mean nothing because you're not actually reviewing it. What you're doing is describing the premise and then say, if you like magical ninjas, then this magical ninja show is for you. And that serves no purpose. There's no purpose. Right. You can read the back of the box and figure that out. It's all about knowing what your biases are and being upfront when it's that straightforward. With Toriko, the entire premise is hunting. I don't have a problem when they occasionally kill a magical beast or something in One Piece. That doesn't bother me. And the fact that they're fictional monsters, I'm not saying, what about the fictional crocodiles? That's not my point.
There's also fictional plant life, too.
Yeah, right. That's not the point. That's not what I'm saying. But you still need to be able to subjectively judge the merits of a show, and if there is a particular thing about it that really bothers you, like a 10-year-old demon who has to fillet people to live, you should mention that. Jesus Christ, I can't believe that's the premise.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, I am going to be watching Toriko. I think it's such a throwback in terms of styles of manga and styles of anime. It seems straight out of the 80s. And the fact that it's being made now is kind of miraculous to me, let alone the fact that it's a hit.
Also, correct, stop me if I'm wrong here, but Toriko himself is the ultimate designed by committee Shonen Jump hero. I mean,
I don't think he is.
Oh, come on. The orange jumpsuit, the Goku hair, the big muscles.
The Goku hair, yeah. The big muscles and the giant crazy hair and the fang-like teeth, that is sort of an aesthetic that kind of went out of fashion like the second Saint Seiya and all that stuff hit it big.
Yeah, you're right.
Because girls don't really go for that kind of guy. That's more like an 8-year-old boy's idea of what the ultimate badass hero is,
Now that I think about it, Toriko is like if Goku and Dark Schneider had a kid. that's a mashup.
Interestingly enough, the ladies kind of went for Dark Schneider.
But I mean, Toriko is, I mean, to for it to be a hit, it must be popular with both girls and guys, because, I mean,
it is.
Shonen Jump appeals very squarely to both, to everybody.
Well, the opening animation had a ton of characters in it, and some of them looked as though they were designed for the ladies.
Yeah, and they were. So don't get me wrong. It's not like there's no Toriko yaoi material. It certainly exists. But usually, you know, the main character is the one who's the most designed by committee. And in this case, it seems like there's a couple side characters who don't get quite as much screen time as, say, I don't know, Sanji and Zoro in One Piece do.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, the opening, there was also sort of a hint of, like, a supervillain society and, you know, all the staples of Shonen Jump stuff. So the story, it sounds like you're pretty familiar with the story. Is it really rote, or is there enough unique about it that makes it stand out, or is it just, like, standard Shonen Jump?
I think it's actually just bursting with imagination throughout it. Like, okay. There's a lot of stuff as you go through it, and it's like, wow, I never even thought of that. I will say the anime is toned down from the manga. The manga's got a lot of, you know, more crazy kind of stuff in it, mostly in terms of, like, I think maybe when they made the anime, they thought about the fact that it might eventually come out over here, so they automatically took out a lot of the hard drinking and smoking and the various things that, you know, make One Piece unpalatable for TV, you know, for the most part.
Well, but, you know, and there are people complaining about the fact that the TV version is too censored, quote-unquote.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they do have a point, but, you know, I can understand it. It's kind of like the equivalent of, you know, Neji and Naruto, you can't have a swastika on his forehead anymore in the anime.
Yeah. Maybe take some of that stuff out just to make it a little bit more international in appeal. Anything else, or does that pretty much...
I've got a few others.
I checked out... there was that one show which interested me. What's it? The 30-Year-Old's Guide to Health?
People hated that thing.
Ed Chavez bought me that manga.
That was why I wanted to watch it, was because you have that manga, but it just was... lousy to me.
Yeah. I didn't even bother to watch it once I saw all the reviews come in and saying, you can't even show it on TV. What's the point of showing this on TV? It's a sex manual.
There is so much censorship in that it is absolutely pointless to watch. And then, I mean, I don't know if this was part of the manga, but then they like introduced like the god of sex in it to help this guy out. And a lot of
I can't read the text of the manga, but as far as I can tell, there isn't really very much in the way of supernatural elements in the comic that Ed Chavez gave me.
No,
it seemed like a straight up instructional manual for how to have sex if you're 30 years old and you've never been with a woman.
I paged through it and it didn't seem anything like that. And so I don't know really where they're getting these elements from. And I thought, you know, maybe this could be kind of a funny like look at this, but it was just kind of lame. I don't know. I checked out an episode of, how do I pronounce this? Yonde Masio
Azazel-san.
Azazel-san.
It's a madhouse show, so I don't know. I didn't really like what I saw. It has got very nice production values, but again, I mean, the episodes are about 10 minutes long, so I could probably watch maybe a few more, but I'm not sure. I'm not super big into like the demon summoning sort of shows in general, but I don't know. I can't say I'm going to continue with that one. And I guess out of just perverse curiosity, I saw one episode of Battle Girls.
I didn't even go near it.
Pretty much expecting from the name alone, and that was awful.
It's dreadful. It's so badly written.
And I can't really even figure out, like, who would watch
it. Who it's for, yeah.
it's not even, like, it doesn't seem to have enough fan service for the guys, unless, like, just the presence of, like, large tits is all they need.
I think that's all they need.
Well, usually you have to show some pink at some point, but it was just
Listen,
shitty.
This is about planting seeds to create, you know, inspire doujinshi. That's how they work now in anime.
Yeah, I mean, Sengoku Basara, but with guys and very, very much...
It's not crazy enough to be Sengoku Basara.
No,
I mean,
it's not.
I like Sengoku Basara.
It's not even crazy enough. It's not imaginative enough for Sengoku Basara. Sengoku Basara, I enjoyed quite a bit. So
Battle Girls feels like it was written by somebody who was sleeping at the time.
Yeah.
Because it's the premise is completely unoriginal. It's been done a billion times, but they treat it like no one's ever made this show before.
Yeah.
So they spend the entire first episode, almost nothing happens. Like, she goes back in time, there's a chick version of Oda Nobunaga, and that's it. that's all that happens. And the lead character is constantly narrating, and she's an airhead, and it's just fucking irritating. That show is repulsive.
Yeah, like, it's awful.
It really made me just want to run in the other direction. And it's not like offensive. It's just the fact that it's so lazy and so generic and so just thuddingly samey that I can't believe it got produced. And at no point did anyone stop and say, what are we doing? Are we wasting resources on this?
Yeah, it does, like, I guess the worst thing that a show can do, and that is be utterly mediocre.
Yeah, in every possible respect.
Yeah, that's the worst thing a show can do. Like, if a show wants to be awful and, like, horrible fan service, go the hell all out.
Right.
Don't waste my time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that show just horrible. I don't know if we're only talking about new season stuff, but I guess...
Let's stick to new season, just because we got quite a bit to go through. Has anybody else watched Steins Gate?
I haven't. Everybody else got to it first, and my rule is if everybody else has reviewed it, I don't bother with it because I have enough to do. But what did you think of it?
I actually didn't watch it yet because it's like I am thinking that's the kind of show with that kind of premise that could turn awful. I mean, more likely than other shows. I mean, so far, everyone seems to be thinking, oh, this could go either way. And anytime I start hearing that, I'm like, I'm going to assume that it's not going to turn out okay. And if I'm wrong, please tell me once the show is over and I'll go back and watch it.
Once people started saying that the initial episode is exposition free and basically just a mood setting series of confusing events, I know for me personally that style of storytelling drives me nuts because all I can do is sit there and think, when are you going to give me a reason to give a shit about what is happening? That's all I can think.
I accept that style of storytelling if I knew with certainty that they actually knew where it was going. I feel like whenever I see that in anime, it's a smokescreen for the fact that we haven't actually figured it out yet, guys.
Yeah.
So, Zach, did you like... I don't know if this is, like, not a fair comparison, but did you like and see Technolize?
Yeah, Technolize drove me crazy for similar reasons. But okay, I got through enough of it. Technolize, actually, I think was kind of better in terms of execution. I eventually the story sort of comes around, and that's one of those cases where actually the best way I can put this is I'm okay with that kind of storytelling in a film because I know the movie's going to be over in 90 minutes and they have that amount of time to tell the story. But in a 26 episode TV series, I need to know whether or not this is worth wasting my life on, mm-hmm. you know, and if the show doesn't give me a good reason to think that it is going to be good, I have a hard time getting there.
I was just going to say, ever since the mid-90s when a certain show made it, you know, all the rage to throw open a bunch of weird mysteries and mysterious symbolism that you're not sure if it means anything, keep watching and find out. Ever since that was a huge hit, everyone decided we can do that too in our show, our production schedule.
Yeah, you're and, referring to Millennium. Oh, no, Dark Skies. No, wait, Roswell. Or are you talking about X-Files?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those shows.
Ever since that was like, you know, all those things caught on, you know, everyone starts doing it and it works in anime as well. I mean, you know, I don't want to go into the Evangelion talk, but, you know, the history of that is well known. And, you know, I think it's a smokescreen for just poor planning. If they just sat down and blocked this stuff out and said this will happen, you know, in episode 1, 2, 3, 4, then you can jumble up the pieces and do that weird kind of opening and have it pay off.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's a payoff to it, I can deal with that. But yeah, and that's why I just can never watch those shows as they're coming out.
Yeah.
I was crawling up the walls when I was watching Technolize.
Yeah. Well, I watched that on 1.5 speed, which really did help. You get through that stuff much quicker that way. That came out, Jesus, that was a long time ago at this point. It's like 2004 or something. Somebody did option that, by the way. There's a script, a live action version of it floating around out there.
Of course.
It always is.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think if there was anything else that I checked out. I'm really looking forward to see the
Inui Tamina.
Yeah, and it's from Kenji Nakamura, who did Mononoke, which I didn't see, but he also did Trapeze, which I found intriguing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. And it's all set, the premise sounds pretty goofy. I don't know if you guys have seen the premise, but it takes place in Tokyo's financial district, and there, if you go broke, you get evicted from the financial district, and everybody has, like, these familiars that help them battle each other on their stock prices or something like that. It looks pretty wacky. But I'm curious about that one.
Usually No Tamina has got some interesting show. Like, I think one of my favorite shows of I think it was last season, was Princess Jellyfish.
Yeah, that was good.
I really liked that show, and it was, like, something that you don't really see in anime, which is, you know, 30-year-old women and, you know, otaku as, like, the real deal. Like, they're not just anime fans and such, so.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, normally when you think of people who say otaku, it's, like, specifically anime, manga, but, you know, the word kind of extends to various other mania, and it's part of why I like Princess Jellyfish quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
Going back to Shonen Jump, did either of you watch Sket Dance?
I did not watch Sket Dance. I took one look at it, and I was like, I don't know what to think about this show. I didn't even know it was a Shonen Jump series.
I don't think it is. It just feels like it. Is it a Shonen Jump series? I can't remember. It feels like one, but I'm not sure if it is or not. But it was the after-schooliest thing I'd seen in so long. I don't think I've seen anything quite that didactic. And felt like it should be on at 4:30 in the afternoon on, like, ABC in a long time. I didn't even know they made stuff like that in Japan. It's super, super didactic.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of thing they'd make fun of in, like, Urusei Yatsura 20, right. 30 years ago.
yeah. Apparently it goes to crazy places or whatever, but I'm not going to stick around to find out. Premise is just not that interesting.
I did watch one episode of one other new show that I probably shouldn't have. I just downloaded the show completely just going on the name alone, and I didn't
even.
Was
it We Without Wings? Please say it was We Without Wings.
Oh my god!
It was called Hanasaku Iroha, and I guess that I will give it credit. It is a gorgeous looking show. I don't know the studio. I'm not familiar with the studio that works on it, but it is, like, every cell of that is beautiful.
Everybody's giving it good marks,
but I don't know where it's going. It's not trying to be a loony comedy, which, you know, any show set in a bathhouse would be, and it's not. So that's plus marks. So I'm not sure if it's trying to be, like, where it's going with it. Maybe I'll follow it. I'm not sure.
Daryl, you unfortunately reminded me of We Without Wings, which I did not review, but I did get through about 15 minutes of it, maybe 17 minutes of it. That is so disgustingly misogynistic, it's hard to believe it exists. I know it's based on a game, some Arrow game, but man, the humor is misogynistic. Like, to a weird extreme that I haven't seen before, really, lately. God damn,
that
show.
Before, people would, like,
sick.
Make fun of, like, Maria Hollick, because, like, the ongoing punchline is, you're gonna get raped, but, you know, here comes We Without Wings.
Right, and the show opens, the first, like, 10 minutes are just these two guys being really gross scumbags about women sitting in a bar going back and forth. I mean, just not funny. And I shut it off at this one point when some dude is buying, like, I can't remember what he's getting, like, food or something, or a watch from some street vendor. And there's this little girl in a black dress who he's having a conversation with. And they're having a discussion, like, the street vendor says, like, oh, don't you know all Japanese men are pedophiles? And so she, like, lifts up her skirt and is wearing, she's clearly, like, 10, 12, lifts up her skirt and she's wearing, like, black panties or whatever. And she tells the guy, like, do you want to put your monster in my kitty? And I'm just like, I'm turning this off. I'm turning this off. That's not funny.
That sounds like some guy saw Superbad and said, we can do a Japanese version of this, or like a moe version of this or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't insult Superbad like that. But yeah, no, just would. Rotten. Just totally rotten. I don't even know who that show... Well, I guess I do know who it's
for. Well, you know who the show is for, Zach.
Yeah,
let's make him
yeah,
stay.
Okay. Let's not pretend. But, ugh, yeah, no, I didn't review it because I didn't get through the whole thing, and I had nothing of value to say about it. The audience for that show doesn't care what I think about that show. But I think that about wraps it up for the...
I got one more, actually. I know, you know, A&N wouldn't really cover it, but I am watching the new X-Men anime. This is the third of the Marvel anime projects that Madhouse is making, and it's actually the best one that's happened yet. I thought that the first one they did, Iron Man, it was like it needed to be a lot better. It was just kind of okay with, like, maybe one or two good episodes. Wolverine was a step up, but still, you know, not quite where something like a big high profile license like that needed to be. X-Men finally feels like they've got it right. If you're, like, into comic books or not, it's perfectly accessible. Like, you know, it's made assuming, like, you know, who the heck are the X-Men? I saw those first two movies. There is no third movie.
I wish that were true.
Yeah, we all wish it were true. If we all get together and you know, close our eyes and say so, maybe it'll come true. But it's well done. It's well animated. It's got great action. The story is kind of like this amalgamation of, like, you know, the 80s era X-Men, the 90s era X-Men, the modern day stuff. It all fits together real well. So far, it's going great. I hope they keep it up. Each Marvel anime has been better than the last. The last one is going to be Blade. That's going to be next season. The rumor is, you know, I don't know if it's true, but they may, or, you know, get Yoshiaki Kawajiri, you know, Vampire Hunter D guy, to do the Blade anime. And so far, for each of these projects that have come out, the episode that he worked on has been, you know, by far and away the best episode of that series. So I do like that. I think I kind of wish maybe they'd rolled out with X-Men first, you know, but on G4, when these things come out, they're obviously going to air them in order. Hopefully people will still be watching by the time they get to X-Men, because I think this one could do some good as far as, like, getting in a good time slot and getting some exposure.
Yeah, I'm kind of pissed off about that, because we will cover all those shows once they air on TV. They're licensed. Yeah. And I'm really curious about X-Men, because I used to read X-Men when I was a kid, and I've always sort of maintained a passing interest in it. And the anime looked pretty good based on the trailer I saw. And I know, like you said, Iron Man didn't live up to its potential. And personally, I think Blade has the least amount of potential to be decent, but I'm not a fan of the Blade franchise, so yeah.
I'm a fan of the Blade franchise. What I'm not that big a fan of is anime with vampires in it. Because so much of it is terrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the few anime I can think of about vampires that were good, most of them were Madhouse productions.
Right. Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust.
Bloodlust. And, you know, hey, if you got the people who worked on that making this, which rumor has it they do, it could be something.
If Kawajiri's on it, I'll definitely give it a shot. But I just, that whole world and those characters, for some reason, I guess I'll just never forgive them for Blade 2.
Blade 2 is such a divisive one. It's either, if you ask people, it's either their favorite one of the three or their least favorite one of the three. For me, it's my favorite one of the three, but, you know, people go back and forth on that.
It has, like, the worst special effects of any modern.
And Guillermo del Toro is so honest about it. Yeah. Whenever on the commentary, he's like, oh, yeah, and here's the totally crappy CGI scene of them. Doesn't even look real. I don't know why they made it. We had no money. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wesley Snipes is laughing at it and all that stuff, too. So they at least knew the shitty parts of Blade 2 when they saw him.
Actually, you know, maybe I haven't seen the movie in a long time. I remember not liking it in the theater, but perhaps my dislike of the film is exaggerated because I also have Vietnam-style flashbacks to Harry Knowles' review of that movie.
Oh, man. don't do that to yourself. I don't even read Ain't It Cool News or any of those sites, like, hyping up total crap.
Although their anime section is done by a pretty cool dude.
Scott Green
knows his stuff.
I mean, I still read Ain't It Cool just out of habit. It's hard to stop reading a site you've been reading for 10 years or whatever. But
yeah, I generally decided, like, at one point I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop reading all these hype websites, these geek nerd like things that keep releasing the information about, you know, the next big movie coming out. And I found once I did that, I enjoyed movies a whole lot more. One, because, you know, I didn't have my hot hopes, like, artificially elevated too high. And two, because I just, you know, they spoil the hell out of the movie, such that by the time you see it, you already know, you know, three quarters of what's going to go down.
Yeah, I stopped watching trailers that weren't teasers. Mostly because I purposefully try to time it so that when I go to a movie, I miss the trailers, because I guarantee you I will have seen all of them at least twice before I get into the theater, and I don't want to sit through 20 minutes of footage I've already seen. But once I stopped doing that, yeah, it did make it more enjoyable. And actually, I'm really enjoying Devin Ferrazzi's new site, Badass Digest. I don't know if you guys read that.
I haven't heard about it, but I'll check it out.
It's good. He tries to, he acknowledges when he's doing something for the hits. He's very cynical about that kind of thing. If you follow him on Twitter, it's great. He takes shots at all the guys who are like, major news, Nicolas Cage reading Superman script, you know, that kind of bullshit. Like, he really takes those guys on. But it's a good site. That's probably the best movie news-related site that I've seen pop up lately. It's kind of the antithesis of all the other ones. But definitely worth worth checking out. But anyway, back on topic. So the big news from the last couple of weeks that I just wanted to briefly mention, because I don't think there's much to say about it, but Funimation finally, quote-unquote, got sold. Gen Fukunaga basically put together a little team of investors, and they bought it from Navar. Which, good for him, because I believe he sold it for $125 million and then paid $24.
And then bought it back for a quarter of the price.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Totally baller.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a good move, provided the team of investors he's put together is patient and they're not the type of slash-and-burn capitalists who are just going to gut the company for its profit potential and then leave the corpse on the side of the road.
Fukunaga is a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, he is.
He'd probably write that into the contract.
I don't think he would have gotten together with guys who were sort of evil capitalist billionaire types. But that's really all there is to say. It's a better environment for them. Everybody at Funimation certainly seems to be much happier with this arrangement. They were all quite jubilant on various social networking sites when the news went down. So I only see it right now as a good thing. We're not going to know what kind of impact it has for a long time, probably for months and months.
Well, he made the good move, becoming part of Navare, right when, the anime industry kind of hit the fan. And, when you're part of a multi-billion-dollar company, it's easier to weather the storm. So, I don't know, maybe he sees there's a light at the end of the anime industry tunnel?
I don't know. I don't want to get into too much speculation, but right now, seems like a good thing. Not much more to say about it.
Yeah.
I know my boss is attempting to interview Gen about it, but there's so little to say in terms of big picture that we're kind of throwing up our hands and saying, well, the chips fall where they will, So con season's coming up. It's like right around the corner. And you guys are pretty active. The first thing you're doing is Anime Boston, right?
Actually, Gerald just got a little bit of a head start on me because he went to the biggest convention here in Florida. MegaCon. It's more of a sci-fi general media sort of thing.
Yeah, I did some panels there. MegaCon, I guess, is our big local nerd con. I guess every city has got things like that. I mean, I guess you guys have got the biggest of them all there.
Right.
So
yeah, you got Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we did our panels there. And it's nice to do panels to those sorts of things because the crowd is smaller and you can kind of almost do some beta panels to see if they go over pretty well.
Right,
yeah, other than that, it's basically like a lot of those nerd cons, which it's a giant dealer's room.
Yeah, well, Anime Boston in 2 weeks, I believe, Easter weekend, that's going to be like our first major anime convention of the year. And I've got at least five that I've got to do. I think between myself, Gerald, Clarissa, Mike Toole, we're doing 11 total.
Jeez.
I've been working every day. I've been coming home for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and just working on panels.
Yes.
You want to give a rundown of what you're doing, actually, just to give people an idea, what sort of nerd things happen at AnimeCon?
The panels I'm doing? I'm going to be doing Tezuka 101, a basic kind of introduction to Osamu Tezuka, what he's about, and why he's important and such. I'm going to be doing the Sane Fan's Guide to Mecha Anime.
Now explain that one. The Sane Fan's Guide to anime. Why do that?
Really, it's kind of a Mecha 101. But I go to Mecha panels a lot because I like giant robots and such. But the crowds are shrinking at those panels, and they aren't really doing a very good job of bringing in new people to giant robot anime.
And they're getting a little more extreme. I think if we had to pull an analogy, we would say that the robot fans are the Republican Party or the Tea Party of anime fandom.
Oh, my God.
Because, I mean, there's some good shows they like, but, man, their conduct, I think, is just, incredibly off-putting to anyone who would, kind of curious that wants to get in and gets told, here, watch, these 300 episodes of a show from 30 years ago.
Yeah, and when you walk into a room and there's a group of big guys all yelling Sieg Zeon and you
doing
don't know
what appears
on.
To be a Nazi salute.
Yes. This is not going to attract people to this thing. So what this is really about is, what is Mecha about? Why should you care about it? There's something out there that you would like, no matter what it is you like, and it's kind of an introduction for it.
Yeah, I think the idea was sort of born out of the fact that, this show from a couple of years ago, Tengen Toppa Gurren Lagann, came out and a lot of people liked it.
Yeah.
And then Code Geass, was a fairly decent hit as well. And, people reacted to a lot of these shows like they were nothing like they'd ever seen before. When the truth
was, the more anime, the more like giant robot anime you'd seen, like the less impressive Gurren Lagann was. It still was a good show, but you'd seen a lot of it before, and so this is kind of to say, well, if you liked Gurren Lagann, check this out, or you know, things like that.
Good. Well, what else? What else?
Also doing notable directors of anime that aren't Hayao Miyazaki, because it seems like
Sean Russell would approve.
Yeah, the only people that people seem to know who worked on their anime is Hayao Miyazaki, and so this is, you know, a panel that's attempting to get people to think about who makes the anime that they watch.
I actually like to bring that up as, and why that matters. I think the point that is often made is that anime or manga or whatever aren't like inherently good just because it's anime or because it's manga. A character isn't good just because they're that character. Somebody took that character and told a good story with that character, and that's why you like it. That's why you like that story. That's why you like that character. And so, therefore, it's worthwhile to know the creator.
Well, that's always been a problem in anime fandom. We're so disconnected from the actual creative people that put this stuff together, like, historically, completely disconnected from it.
Yeah.
Their names are hard to pronounce.
The information used to be hard.
Yeah, well, their names are hard to pronounce, and we're never really confronted with them. Like, we get a few superstars coming over to the U.S. We get some voice actors, maybe the occasional character designer or whatever. But for the most part, these are obscure people. And it's good to show people, like, you know this guy that made 78 episodes of a TV show you love? Well, here he is, and his creative sensibility is responsible for why you like that show. And that's important. You know, in the same way that we totally worship at the feet of our favorite American directors and actors and screenwriters, you know, even like famous cinematographers, you know, people know their names. And it's important to know that when you're really into anime. It is a totally creative medium, and we should know who those people are. That's a good point.
And my enjoyment of anime increased a lot more when I looked at these people who made these shows that I liked and checked out other works, because, I mean, it their style permeates most everything they do. And, I mean, I guess in anime there's kind of this, I don't know if I want to call it anti-intellectualism, that's kind of a big word, but people are quite happy not knowing who worked on this stuff, and I'm hoping that at least I can show them that, you know, the stuff is not made in a bubble. So,
yeah, I think people who like anime but are also into, like, film is the sort of person that you're kind of targeting with this. Because your average, I mean, as much as, yes, we all know who Steven Spielberg is, it is a movie nerd thing to know, you know, other, you know, maybe less famous but obscure directors whose work they follow.
Right.
So you are kind of targeting a very specific sort of person. But if you're really into anime, you know, your horizons could be expanded if you know this one guy happens to make things and you can dig through his back catalog.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
And I'm also doing the history of hentai, which I know sounds like a disgusting panel to do, but I'm quite happy with it, because you find out that people, the greatest people who have ever worked in anime and manga have worked in adult anime and manga.
Right.
So, like, Osamu Tezuka has done a lot in it and such. It's a panel.
It's actually a historical overview sort of panel, as opposed to like the erotica get horny sort of thing.
Yeah, I really hate those panels where it's like, here's some wacky hentai. Isn't this crazy?
Yeah.
This is you know this stuff, you know, started when anime started, and it's been around as long as anime, and it'll be around as long as anime, and there are very good creators in it as well. So,
actually, brief note: am I wrong about this, or is your mecha panel opposite V Guy?
Once I pointed that out, and I thought it was so perfect that was the case, they actually rescheduled the V Guys panel. I was like, man, I should have. Oh, darn.
That upset me, because it's kind of like the point of the panel is to get the other people who wouldn't go to that panel. But
but V Guy's whole thing is that he's bringing Evangelion to new people, so, you know, that's his whole shtick. But that's enough about V-Guy.
Well.
We've had plenty of V-Guy on this podcast.
Certainly. Then I guess I've got some panels of my own. I'm doing a decent variety. The first thing I'm doing is a panel simply titled "Who Was Carl Masek?" You know, Carl Masek, as you know, Zach, because he was on this very podcast shortly before he passed away, was one of the pioneers of bringing anime as anime to America. And so I'm hopefully going to be joined by one of the con guests, Richard Epcar, voice actor, longtime veteran who worked with Carl. And, you know, just give some stories. He did a lot of work, not just in anime, but also in American television and animation and such. So, you know, that's going to be one that I do. Similarly, I'm also doing a memorial on Satoshi Kon, a great anime director who passed away last year from pancreatic cancer. It's been about 9 or 10 months now. I'm kind of breaking my back on that one because, you know, I get the feeling the only people who are going to show up to that are definitely the hardcore film nerds that you were talking about.
Yeah.
And there's another Satoshi Kon panel there already.
But mine is going to be different. His is going to be a little more open, freeform discussion. I'm going to try and be a little more, like, specific. Like, here's the manga that he worked on. Here's, you know, the essays he wrote. You know, here's some examples of stuff that he did. Here's some, you know, him interviews, that sort of thing. You know, just to kind of get that out there, because I do think that's kind of one of anime's biggest losses of the last few years is the passing of Satoshi Kon. In addition, I'm also doing a general like anime 101 sort of panel. Very, very basic kind of stuff. This is meant to be like if you've never been to an anime convention before, you know, go to this panel, and I'm just going to go over not just what anime and manga mean, because I notice a lot of people still argue what counts as anime and what counts as manga. So I'm like, let me put that to rest right now. And then just do a quick overview of, like, the history of anime, starting from, like, the early 1900s. Run some old examples of anime, stuff from the 30s, 40s. Got some great World War II propaganda in there. Just to give people just an idea that anime existed for quite some time and that, you know, you can look into these things as in-depth as you want, just because I know a lot of people, you know, it's not wrong to say, you know, the first anime was Astro Boy, but that's a conditional thing. There was, you know, anime for decades prior, you know, not just theatrically, but also, you know, different looking than what we're used to or what we commonly consider as such. Then I got on the total opposite scale. I know those are all kind of dry, you know, not really big popular things. So I do two bigger, more popular ones. One, anime's craziest deaths. The name of it kind of sums it up. It's a festival of just hilarious violence. And in so doing, I kind of showcase a lot of that old crazy anime that, you know, I got into back when I was a teenager, because, you know, in the 90s, so much of the anime that came out here was this crazy, super violent, you know, shit that was like, holy crap, cartoons with blood.
Didn't you get in trouble for that panel one year?
I did, but it was not for violence. It was because there was incidental nudity. And so the violence was perfectly fine.
God, screwed up country.
Well, you know, it's the country we live in. I will abide by the guidelines and have absolutely no nudity whatsoever, which in some cases means I have to go through and, like, frame by frame do my own cuts out of the scene to ensure, oh, there was a flash of something there. But
didn't you get kicked out for that Apocalypse Zero clip where the girl got her intestine squeezed out of her
mouth? No, it was for the incidental nudity in that. The intestine squeezed out was perfectly fine.
Jesus.
So I will be running that panel, and I guarantee that it is safe for people who are afraid of nudity.
of breasts?
And then on Saturday with Mike Toole of the Mike Toole Show column on the Anime News Network, also Otaku USA contributor, we are doing Anime Hell on Saturday night, which you know, is not really all about anime. It's a lot of just crazy, weird stuff. A lot of times we like to pass out 3D glasses and show, like, cheesy stuff from, you know, the last time 3D was in trend. But also I like to show a bunch of crazy ninja stuff and Gatchaman and Charge Man Ken and a bunch of, you know, silly anime stuff too. So that is a pretty full plate for me as far as Anime Boston. And it's in 2 weeks, so
we have got a lot of work to do.
Isn't that the same weekend as PAX this year?
Next year.
Next year, okay.
Weekend as PAX.
So yeah, next year, the Nerd
PAX
Explosion.
Was last month.
Right. Yeah, okay.
It is going to be Nerd Central in Boston.
So
next year,
one thing, the only panels I ever run are Anime News Network panels, which that's where I work, so I don't have to do any preparation for those. And now we're doing live podcasts, but I'm really curious because you guys put a lot of work into these panels, and I know a lot of people do, but I was looking over the Anime Boston schedule, and first of all, I find the names that are trying too hard to be clever to be very annoying.
That seems to me to be a unique to Anime Boston only thing.
Yeah, I guess that's an Anime Boston only thing, but a lot of them sound pretty wretched. And I'm curious, and I've sat through my fair share of badly run panels, where the person didn't put enough preparation into it, or it's too much of a dry lecture. That also is kind of a killer.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, what negative trends have you noticed? Like, what would you say, like, the don'ts are of a panel construction? And what do you strive for in terms of, like, what you're trying? Are you trying to be entertaining? What's the perfect balance, do you think?
It's a good question. I think the biggest don't of a panel tends to actually also be probably the most common thing that we see. A lot of people say, oh, I kind of know about something, and I'm just going to show up and wing it for an hour or so and get a free badge out of it. And I think a lot of times that's been sort of the norm for anime panels, to the point where, you know, most places don't really think too much of panels. But there are, at the more major panels, more major conventions, you know, the people in charge are more discerning, and they ask for, you know, more material. That doesn't necessarily mean they get them. But I would say the biggest guideline to be would be to know what you're talking about going in, like exactly how long it's going to take to say it. Not saying that always happens. I'm not saying that's not going to happen in Anime Boston at someone at some point. But that is my first bit of advice. As far as, like, do I be entertaining? Do I be informative? I try to be subversive about it. I try to be entertaining first and foremost, and in so doing, end up informing people. For example, the anime's craziest death thing, okay, yeah, for all the gore hounds in attendance. But by going for the clips that I show, I'm going to actually end up showing them a huge section of the history of anime, of things that came out, you know, over the years, and say, like, hey, this was made and you can go see this. That's kind of my objective whenever I run a panel. This exists. This is cool. You can go see this. And to that end, I usually like to have video clips in my panels. I don't really like PowerPoint. I think PowerPoint reminds people of school.
Yeah.
I think it reminds people of college and their boring, dry professors. I like to have video. I like to have, you know, something with multimedia incorporated into
it. I think PowerPoint in its inherently is not bad. It's just used very badly. Like, I think that for anime conventions especially, PowerPoint should at best be like almost personal notes to yourself that everybody can see. And that kind of lead to something else, like a video or an interesting discussion or something.
Yeah, as opposed to like the PowerPoint that has a statement and then you read just that statement and nothing else.
Yeah, it's like the first day of class where the professor's just reading the syllabus.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to help people. That's not entertaining. I mean, I think in the best case scenario, when people buy their tickets to anime conventions, they never care about panels. No one's looking at that. They're looking at guests. They're looking at musical acts. But once they're there at the show, they're going to want something to do. And I think that's where panels and live events at a convention really come into play, because if those suck, then all you're going to be left with is a bunch of people in the hallway screaming a bunch of annoying shit. And I'm a little too old for that at this point, personally.
Yeah. I think the best thing that a panel can do is present to me a subject that I had very little interest in or very little knowledge in, and at the end of the panel, I'm now more knowledgeable or interested in it, even if I, you know, still have my particular feelings about that subject. That, like, I don't know. I have no interest in particular in Toho. But, you know, if I went to a Toho panel and I came out, like, wanting to find out more about Toho, then I think that panel did its job.
Can I just say that has never happened to me in my life?
You've never gone
to a Toho panel and wanted to know more about Toho coming out.
No, it's never happened to me either. I'm just using Toho as an example.
Okay. No, but as intellectually curious people, even though you have no interest in it, you still are curious about it and want to
know what makes it tick. I want to know why people are into it. I want to know, like, what sort of thing can I check out, you know, afterwards. That's kind of what I'm looking for when I go to a panel. When I do panels, I want people to hopefully walk out and maybe not have liked everything I showed, but maybe been interested in two or three things and to say, hey, I should remember the name of that, or I should check that out, or yeah, I should go and watch that, because sometimes it's showing in the video rooms at that very convention. And, you know, I don't need to tell anyone else here that people don't show up to anime cons to watch anime anymore now that they figure, hey, it's all on Netflix or they can get it on DVD. But a lot of times we're overwhelmed by choice that unless you say watch that one, then you're not going to do it.
Yeah, I think also like offering something to the audience on the way out in terms of like where can they go from this is a good idea as well. Like you were saying, Daryl, like in the Tezuka panel, I kind of liked, I like to end that panel with, if you're more interested in Tezuka, you know, here are some things that you can conceivably go to the dealer's room or Amazon.com right now and check out, and these are a good place to start with Tezuka. And, you know, go from there.
I agree.
Know, hopefully maybe one or two people will check it out.
Yeah, I think what you guys are basically attempting is to bring legitimate panels back. I think when I look at the schedule, I cannot help but roll my eyes. It's like if I see one more fucking zombie apocalypse panel, I have implored every convention manager I know, please stop allowing those stupid fucking zombie panels. It's not funny anymore. It's not creative anymore. It's old. Jesus Christ.
And the thing is that the zombie always... stuff they talk about doesn't really tie in to the tradition of zombies as depicted in Japanese pop culture anything. It just happens to be people who are really big into World War Z and Max Brooks and that sort of thing, talking about, you know, board up your windows and, you know, did you see The Walking Dead, guys? And, okay, I get that, you know, geeks of all sorts come to the anime con, but we should try and keep things at least in the sphere of that Asian pop culture zone. And, I always seem like when I see like say the steampunk panels because that's the big thing now.
Yeah.
They don't talk about the steampunk anime at those panels. It's not like it's the panel you show up to and they're like, well, there's Last Exile and all this because you know what, most of the steampunk anime sucks.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that's not what they talk about. They just talk about, you know, well, here's how to make it look like a dumpster threw up an Abraham Lincoln.
Which brand of pocket watch has the best shit to glue to this top hat?
Exactly. Yeah. And I understand why they do it. Because you know, a ticket sold is a ticket sold. But I think for anime cons to still mean something, we should be talking about anime or at least something kind of related to anime like ninja or samurai or, you know, that kind of stuff. You can talk about J-pop, video games even. Just keep it somewhat close, I mean, you know?
And I mean, the zombie panel, like as an example, like I know they didn't have that last year at Otakon. And we got to talk to the panel manager, who is a pretty cool guy, and was saying, you know, we allow about 10% unrelated panels.
And that's okay, kind of, if you're Otakon, the biggest game, you know, on this side of the country. But if you're a smaller convention, maybe 300, 500 people, 1,200 people, and you don't have 6 or 7 panel rooms alone like Otakon does, you know, you probably don't want to go that route. But, you know, I've seen it happen. You know, a lot of things are going as far as, like, I don't know, they want to do, like, the sci-fi fantasy stuff at the anime cons now, like burlesque shows. That's kind of like a emerging thing. Have you seen this, Zach?
Yeah, of course I've seen it, yeah. Fucking everywhere. You know, it's the same. Well, that's the thing. And you know, I'm a pretty cynical guy, and I get tired of stuff easily. But this stuff is just so tired. When I see a zombie survival panel, you may as well just have a room. In my estimation, it has no more value than a room full of people yelling, beaten into the ground, like Portal references at each other. Like, it serves.
Yeah, Portal 2 comes out right before Anime Boston. I can't.
If I had a time machine, I would go forward in time, get a copy of that game, and play it before it came out. Just so I could enjoy the game.
For me. Yeah, exactly.
So I could enjoy the game without every scrap of humor in it being completely driven into the ground and turned into paste.
That's what happened to me before. I played Portal, and I was like, well, now I played Portal, and then I promptly put it away.
I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the game, but I felt like a total asshole playing it.
I agree. I'm totally with you. But yeah, I do think there are some panels that need to be at every anime con. I think, like, the 101 one that I do, I offer that to every anime con I go to just because every con I've been to, I always start off by asking, who here in the crowd, is this your very first anime convention ever? And I always get people who raise their hands. And so I think, you know, there's some stuff that's worthwhile, that's worth doing, you know, every time. But yeah, you're right. There are things that are just beaten into the ground, and you just can either give it a rest or do it in a more appropriate environment, like, say, the sci-fi convention, or the, like, the geek nerd media expo, or whatever they call them now.
Yeah, anyway, we're a little off topic here. Let's go ahead and get, we got a shitload of stuff on Twitter, so let's get to that.
Yeah, okay. I think all these questions are almost guaranteed to be pranks, because, I mean, the amount of time I waste on Twitter is concerning even me at this point. And I would think that if people had questions for me, legitimate ones, they would just ask me directly.
Well, these are some. A lot of these are dumb, but let's get through them anyway.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay, Ed Sizemore.
Of course.
Wants to know... I think I got a question from Ed every show now. He wants to know when you're going to have your own reality show, the Anime World Order reality show, and who would be the sponsor?
I wouldn't want a reality show about us, because it would basically be, you know, the equivalent of when they have the fishing shows and the editor's like, hey, you know that part where neither of them move for 90 hours? We're going to have to trim that down a bit. that would basically be the show, is, you know, us procrastinating.
And then arguing very awkwardly for, you know, half an hour or so.
And then cutting the whole argument out.
Yeah. Or making the argument seem like, that's the end of it, the end of Anime World Order, every episode.
Is this the end of the Eltingville Club?
Right.
When in reality, that's just how we talk to each other.
Okay.
Could have Ed Chavez sponsor us.
Right. Vertical. Yeah. Penguin Truth wants to know what we think of the advertising in Tiger and Bunny.
I think it's actually kind of clever.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
It's a good way to pay for a show, and they're actually doing something with it that means something.
Yeah.
It's a good use of satire that also happens to pay for the show. I like that. Okay. Scott Spaziani wants to know which My Little Pony is your favorite.
This is actually a legitimate question, because everybody we know is crazy over this new My Little Pony cartoon.
Well, I think that we know the real players are going for Pinkie Pie. All the fakers are going for Rainbow Dash.
I hate this. I hate you.
Yeah, see, Gerald's for real. He's watching that show.
Fucking My Little Pony. God damn it.
How on earth did this happen? Where are we now that My Little Pony is now an internet sensation?
It's fucking groupthink.
It's those eyes. It's those anime eyes. Which are derived from Disney eyes, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay. Ed wants to know if Anime World Order is really made up of Carl Horn's love children. All right.
Carl Horn, for those who don't know, he's an editor at Dark Horse, hopefully still is.
One of the last two employees of their manga department. It's him and Gombos, and that's it.
Possibly the smartest person ever to be involved in anime or manga.
Yeah, yep. Period. I mean, I've gone back and looked at posts that he wrote when I was 9 years old, and they're just as sharp as, you know, anything he's doing now. So he's always been that good.
If he's ever around at a convention, hang around him and just listen to him.
Yeah, go to his
everything
panels,
that comes out of his mouth is amazing.
Talk. I try and remember everything so I can steal his ideas and pretend I thought them up. But yeah, Carl Horn is great, and he does listen to our show, and it's, you know, one of the few that he does. But he has never been on the show. He's been on other shows.
Yeah, I've had him on. I meant to have him on for his own episode, but he wound up on our Evangelion show. We'll have him on again at some point in the near future.
It'll be great listening, I guarantee you.
Yeah, well, it's funny because he came on the show, and he's so knowledgeable. He was just, you know, you ask him a question and you just let him go.
Yeah, 45 minutes later, it's like, all right.
Well, yeah, and then people in the forums are like, is he reading off of a paper? It's like, no, that's Carl.
No, that's just him.
It is all in his head.
Yeah, that's just Carl. That's just who he is. Okay, Andrew Seeger wants to know, how does he get normal anime fans, i.e. girls, to watch shows like Mazen Kaiser and Giant Robo?
You don't force things on people, I would say.
Nope.
I think anytime you put something and say you have to watch this, people interpret it as work, and anime is supposed to be like a recreational pursuit. You don't want people thinking that they have to watch this the way that they have to read Shakespeare in class or something like that. I think the only way you convince people to watch certain things is to say this is cool and you want to watch it. How to make someone do that? You can't make people. You know, you can put it out there and say, this is it, this is cool, and you can watch it if you want. And maybe only one or two people might watch it. You know,
yeah.
You can't really force your friends, unfortunately.
Back when I was actually trying to convince people to watch stuff like in person, I don't really do that anymore. But like in college, if there was somebody I was trying to get interested in this, what I would generally do is share interests and engage them in what they're interested in, and then look at that stuff myself and then say, hey, I think you might also like this. Like, you have to be open to an exchange of interests, not just pushing something on somebody.
I agree, yeah.
All right, Cowboy Dev wants to know if there's any old school anime titles we'd like Discotech Media to pick up.
There's so many, and I actually have a good chance of picking them up because that old catalog stuff is kind of cheap now.
I would like to see, like, I don't know, I really like Rose of Versailles. That's kind of a hard sell.
That license is never going to happen, though, because Ryoko Ikeda is crazy.
That's right. What I hear. She's nuts.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as like something that was once released here that isn't anymore, I think My Youth in Arcadia, the Captain Harlock movie, that would be the kind of thing that Discotech would probably pick up. You know, it's used to be an Animeago thing. It's out of print. Gerald's favorite, Crusher Joe.
I would,
you know,
yeah,
probably similar.
I would really like to see a good copy of Do You Remember Love, like an actual.
Oh, come on. You're talking about the totally impossible. I mean, you
yeah,
know,
well, yeah, but you know, this is Fantasyland I'm living
okay,
in.
Okay, Fantasyland,
so.
Yes. Macross, Do You Remember Love is still my pick.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to hold my breath for anything related to Macross. I mean, we can't even get Macross Frontier in America because of all that craziness.
Yeah, I just wrote that whole franchise off. It's like, they're never going to settle their differences. We're fucked. We're not going to get it. Also from Spaziani wants to know, which of your favorite anime do you think would benefit from a remake? My answer to this has always been Berserk, but that's happening now, so now I don't have an answer.
There have actually been a lot of good choices for like things that you'd think they would bring back and you know, haven't. I think... I'm a big fan of all that crazy Gonagai robot stuff, and he's been churning out those remakes of those robot things, but there's been one conspicuously absent choice for all the decades, and that's Grandizer, which is mystifying to me because Grandizer is probably the most popular one as far as like France. He's a Goldorak and that sort of thing. I think if they brought back Grandizer and made that an international thing and shopped it out, they could do some business with that. Still.
And I know you just mentioned this, Daryl, but this is actually, like, I would like to see, like, someone else try to do something with Crusher Joe, because the way it's formatted is it's just a bunch of novels, and so you could just kind of come out with another story of it pretty easily. And there isn't a lot of sci-fi action that's not, like, girls with giant tits and robots, and Crusher Joe is just very much more, like, hard sci-fi action. So I would really like to see like just a one shot of that.
Okay. Yeah, you know, stuff like that. A lot of like that sci-fi action adventure sort of things that kind of got a lot of people into anime in the first place. That seems to be the most enduring hits around the world. Those are the things that seem most rife for remake. I mean, sure, stuff like occasionally does get remade of the newer things. Like there was the remake of Kanon or Canon. But, you know, as far as like something that's going to endure, I think they can kind of go back to that sci-fi mine and get those nerds who'll pay that money.
Yeah. That makes me think, well, not that specifically, but you mentioned Rose of Versailles. I would like to see a modern retelling of that. Update the character designs, maybe just tell that story. Cause I've never seen that. And I'd be interested in seeing
it's
it revisited.
It's such a great show. It's such an influential show. I know, Zach, you're a huge fan of the Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant. Can't wait for that re-release, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But The Rose of Versailles, hugely influential as far as that style, that look,
right.
That, you know, directorial flourish. So I think, yeah, that could be a good one to bring back, even though, you know, again, Ryoko Ikeda is crazy.
Right. Yep. We'll have to wait for her to die, that's all.
Yeah, I would actually like to see, you know, and this has never been made into an anime, but I'm a big fan of the manga, tanked horribly in America, but Swan, Kyoko Ryoshi, Jason Thompson did a House of 1000 manga on it. It's one of my favorite shoujo manga ever, and I think, you know, even though it's about ballet of all things. It's so like crazy melodramatic and over the top. It's like probably more manly than the stuff for guys at this point. I think there's a huge crowd, well, not a huge crowd, but like a significant fan support for things like Princess Tutu, which is also about ballet. I think there is at least some sort of an audience for that. It exists. I'm not saying it's necessarily huge enough to be financially sustainable, but there is a major fan support at every convention you go to for, you know, this cartoon about ballet. So to make like, you know, another one about ballet that's, you know, based on one of like the enduring classics of the, you know, medium, I think that would be a cool thing.
Yeah, if you could get someone to take a risk on something like that.
Yeah, it's always the $1 million question. It's like it's too much of a risk.
Yeah.
I understand, but you know, I'd like to see someone at least you know, they can make the money off of their safe bets and then, you know, every once in a while like do something kind of crazy with it.
All right. Hamsworth asks, if all anime podcasters entered a battle royale like competition, who would be victorious?
Probably Fast Karate, because they have Fast Karate.
You know what? Let's leave it there. Let's just say that that's the answer. Okay. Alex, leave it. Why do you still attend local college anime clubs? Is there something more valuable in them than other ways of watching?
Okay, this is a question probably specifically directed to me, because I don't actually, like you just said, Zach, you used to do the in-person thing. I don't, as a guy in his, you know, 30s now, geez, I don't really have an easy venue to meet other anime fans other than, you know, conventions, and that's only a few times a year, usually not in the area where I live. I got to take a flight out to a con. If you want to meet local people in your area who like anime and are not, you know, in middle school or high school, you know, the college is kind of the only remaining venue that's left. I mean, I'm already way older than those people anyway, but that's sort of, you know, there's a social element to it, to go out and see those things. I think another reason is just to kind of keep yourself grounded. I mean, we're all on the internet. We're all posting and, you know, going on Twitter and message boards and stuff, and we think we know what anime fan tastes are. But there's actually a huge amount of people who are watching anime that just choose not to go on the Facebooks and whatever and actually be part of, like, an online group. And the stuff that they watch and the attitudes that they have are illuminating. Let me put it that way. It's a good way to keep yourself honest, as it were. I don't know, Gerald, do you actually, do you still have any other venues, or do you just like hold your own meetings?
God, I haven't gone to another meeting in a long time. the local college club closed down for very silly reasons. They were only getting like 40 or 50 people a week.
And only is in air quotes, because that's like still.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was the reason given.
Yeah, at their height, they used to feel like one of those giant college auditoriums. But I think there were like political reasons behind it. So I don't really go to them anymore. There's another club that I used to go to, but they were right next to railroad tracks in a really dark, unlit area of town with no food. So I decided to stop that. So I'm just doing my own personal stuff now.
Yeah, you're fortunate that you live in an area where there's a lot of people roughly your age who like anime that you can see on a regular basis and talk to. And so you don't actually need to go to a external venue for that. In the case of Alex, he lives in a major metropolitan area, so he obviously doesn't need to do that. The people in New York City, you know, they've got, you know, their Kinokuniyas and that sort of thing where they can go to and meet other hardcore, you know, dedicated fans. But, you know, a lot of the rest of the country isn't that fortunate.
Yeah, it's actually is. I mean, not that I would necessarily attend because this is my job and I like to spend my free time not doing work. but I don't know of anything out here that's not at a college in Los Angeles that's like some kind of a fan meetup thing. Justin and I toyed with the idea of doing some live ancasts in Los Angeles, but we just had no idea whether or not we'd even get anyone to show up. I don't know. I never really looked into it, though. You don't really think about that stuff when you spend all day working with anime.
Yeah, the one that is here that is not part of a college exists because of arguments and strife that happened in the college club, and then they split off, largely how everything happens in Florida anime society.
I remember my college anime club having lots of drama. Things are always full of drama. Okay, moving on. Itoju wants to know, as someone who's never seen any Pat Labor stuff but wants to check it out, what's the best place to start?
Oh, God. That first movie is such a good place.
Yeah, the first movie is a perfect introduction. It's got great animation.
Yeah.
Doesn't really look too old looking because the budget is very high. The designs are fairly realistic. It's a good story. It's done in one. You get a good introduction to all the characters. That was my first Pat Labor. It was most people's because that was the first one released in America for a long time.
It just gives you enough to get an idea of the characters, and then from there you can dive into the rest of the
TV. Go as deep as you want, man.
And the only part of it I don't like is the third movie. And so everything else of Pat Labor is just great.
Yeah, I think the third movie, I disagree with Gerald. I think it's a good movie. I just don't think it's a good Pat Labor movie. But we can disagree on that. If you want an introduction to Pat Labor, first movie. Pat Labor movie one.
Yeah, I agree with that. As much as I love the second one, I wouldn't say it's a good place to
start. I wouldn't say that's the first place to start.
Yeah.
I think
because that's meant to be kind of the end of Pat Labor. So
yeah, even though I saw it second, it does mean a lot more if you watch it again after having seen it. You know, you get more context, you get more closure for the characters, but you got to know who the characters are first.
Yeah. Although, honestly, I was not too familiar with Pat Labor before watching the second film, and it's still
a great movie.
It's just a good movie. You really don't need to know that much about Pat Labor.
Like, when they first released Pat Labor in America, they just released movie one and then movie two, and that was it, and that was all the Pat Labor anybody saw. And I watched them both, and I was like, wow, this is awesome.
And weirdly enough, that Manga Entertainment dub is really good.
One, which unfortunately is not present on the Bandai Visual one.
No.
But, I did the full Justin Savakis nerd thing and, combined the high-definition, Blu-ray copy to have, every single audio track, because I'm a loser. But, if you want to watch it, it's got a good dub. It's fine in the Japanese. It looks great. Doesn't look too old. It's accessible. So, check that movie out. Check out either of them.
All right. Yeah, if you can track them down.
They're not too hard to find, actually. Amazon's got them. Right Stuff should still have them, too.
Okay. Well,
it's the Bandai Visual re-release.
That's the deluxe ones?
Well, they have the deluxe one, but also the movie alone.
Oh, okay. One. Yeah, because I have the deluxe ones, and from what I understood, those are still kind of hard to track down.
But those are a little tricky to find, because they only made a few of them, and they were kind of pricey, even though they dropped way down in price later, those aren't as easy to track down.
Yeah, I'm really happy I hung on, because I was getting screeners from Onyamas in their heyday, and I'm glad I hung on to most of that stuff. I'm very happy that I still have my deluxe copy of Jinro on Blu-ray.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, What's Your Name wants to know, what are your excuses for not talking about Eagle Heart or Children's Hospital?
I don't know what either of them are. That's
really?
Neither do I.
Seriously? You guys would like them. They're very good. There are Adult Swim, 15-minute size, very smart, funny satires of popular American television genre shows. So Children's Hospital is sort of like Grey's Anatomy. Hospital drama type shows with Rob Corddry and a whole bunch of other really funny people. And you, Daryl, specifically, I think you would really enjoy Eagle Heart, which is Chris Elliott's take on a Walker, Texas Ranger type of show.
Oh, so these are live action shows?
These are live action.
Swim?
Yeah, live
okay,
action
on
Adult Swim.
That's why we haven't talked about them on our podcast. We only talk about Japanese animation and
right,
comics.
I think it just means in general. But I'm kind of surprised you haven't seen Eagle Heart. It seems like it's right up your alley.
Cable. I'll check it out now that I know about it.
They're all on adultswim.com. You can just watch
it. Now that I'm not a college kid anymore and I can't stay up till midnight every night or 1 a.m. every night, then I miss that Adult Swim stuff now.
Yeah, well, I make my own hours, so I stay up late. J.R. Nemanich wants to know, Daryl, you keep calling Gerald a foreigner in the podcast. What country is Gerald from?
This is a question for you, Daryl.
Gerald is from the land of no. No, Gerald was born in, the Virgin Islands. Is that correct?
No, I was born in South Africa.
South Africa? Okay. You change your mind. It's either South Africa, Austria, the Virgin Islands. It varies. It's in quantum. Schrodinger's birth of country.
I have a very weird background, and I don't like to talk about it.
All right, well, then moving on. Manime Podcasts, what will it take for you to come to a West Coast convention?
If somebody flies us out and gives us a place to stay, I will go wherever you want.
We wanted to go to Fanime Con so badly, and then because Fanime is on the weekend of Memorial Day, I think, the tickets are like $250.
Yeah, the tickets are astronomically high. No, they were more than that.
No, I was going to say they were $250 more than they would be any other time.
Yeah, that's true. So. And between that alone and this whole Libya thing driving up the cost of oil, plane tickets are through the roof.
I mean, I paid just to go to Boston an embarrassingly high amount. I was shocked. But and going to California is just so expensive. That's really the only thing that's keeping us back.
Yeah, I think this year the plane fare to Boston is about double what it was last year. Might be my bad memory, but I think that is what it is.
No, the prices are insane. I generally have to do the planning when we're sending people all over the country to conventions to cover them. And we're slowly moving into a model where I stay on the West Coast because I live here, and we get East Coast people to cover East Coast conventions, which is fine with me because I hate flying anyway. But yeah, it's nuts. Like, we're probably going to be bringing Todd out for Comic-Con again, and he lives in New York, and that's like a $500 ticket, $600 ticket, whereas, you know, just a scant 2 years ago, it was $350 or something like that, $300.
Yeah, so while I'd love to come out to, you know, the soccer cons and Fanimes and that sort of thing, but, you know, the finances don't really work out, and, you know, unless I'm able to work out something with the convention where they're like, okay, we'll, you know, give you these in exchange to do this programming for us, which, you know, has happened a few times, you know.
We're happy with doing that, by the way.
We're happy to do it, by the way, if anyone out there is listening. But, yeah, that's basically the only thing that's really stopping us. It's purely a money thing.
All right. From Zaku Ace, he asks what he just listened to your episode about bootlegs. You did a couple years ago. Is bootlegging a big problem now as it was then?
Bootlegs do still exist. I do still see places selling the bootleg DVDs. I do, especially in the Anime Con dealers' rooms, I do still see bootlegs, but it's not as big a problem as it used
to. I don't see it as much in Anime Con dealers' rooms. I see it a lot in, like, Nerd Con dealers' rooms. A lot of, like, those guys that have got tables full of, like, Gem and the Holograms DVDs and such.
Yeah, but, you know, the unofficial DVD-R ones. Yeah, you're right. Most anime conventions now have really put the foot down and, like, no bootleg CDs and stuff like that. Not saying some things don't get through, but it's generally, like, the geek all-encompassing media cons where you really see the bootlegs out in full force.
I mean, when was the last time you saw a Sanmei DVD, a CD?
Well, yeah, they changed their name, though. Like, the bootleggers changed the label to throw people off. So, you know, maybe SM, Sanmei changed to Ever Anime, changed to this, changed to
but
that.
But still, when was the last time you saw anything like that?
I honestly haven't looked at soundtracks for a while, so I haven't seen them in forever.
I think a lot
of people are going towards buying legit merchandise whenever they can. Not to say they necessarily always know if something's legit or not. I know a lot of times the dealer's room places just print up their own stuff.
Well, so, yeah. A couple of things about this. I've noticed the big nerd cons, there's usually bootleg DVDs, although I don't see them at Comic-Con, it's bootleg DVDs of out-of-print American shows that never showed up on DVD or whatever. Not a lot of anime. But anime actually has its own little ghetto in the back at San Diego Comic-Con.
The anime ghetto is something I'm starting to hear more and more about at these major conventions.
Yeah, they lump all
the
dealers.
The value of anime people, they just don't want them near them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more like they're trying to create, like, if you're into this stuff, we're going to put it all in this one area, and if that's what you're interested in, you can go there. Unfortunately, they always put it in the back, so it seems like it's a ghetto. But I see bootleg anime DVDs all the time in Southern California, and this is probably unique to this area, but we actually have a fair number of little Japanese culture pop-up shops where they sell Japanese candy and toys and, you know, some clothing and backpacks and cute little accessories and stuff. And they always have a selection of bootleg DVDs. One just opened in my local mall, and they had a big stack of bootleg DVDs, including, like, Paranoia Agent was sitting there. And I don't have a complete set of Paranoia Agent, and for a brief moment I was like, should I? But no, I can't bring myself to do it. But yeah, so they I see him in those little stores. But I think that's probably a regional thing. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention was eBay is rife with
eBay bootlegs. Is still as bad as it's always been.
Yeah, that hasn't changed. I was doing research on like how much do Sailor Moon DVDs go for, and the closed auctions, most of them were bootlegs. It was pretty bad, and they were selling for like $100 too. Nuts. Dr. Osaka wants to know how much we would pay for a Legend of the Galactic Heroes box set.
Well, you know, that's such a long show, but I mean, if you think about it, you know, to be competitive with, you know, any other release, it would basically, we'd basically want to pay the same amount that any other show that's that long costs now, which is, you know, break it up into 26 episode boxes at a piece. You know, that's what, four box sets? Five box sets, if you maybe six, if you count like everything, you know, and each box set have about $30
or something.
Yeah, that's the reasonable price point for anything at this point. And even that, some people are like, oh, well, maybe I'll wait for the sale. But, you know, that's, you know, where I would say is a not crazy lunatic price, you know, for an anime show.
Yeah, $49.99 for 26 episodes is about reasonable. And that's, I have to admit, I'm not sure I would buy Legend of the Galactic Heroes. I kind of wish it were just on TV or streaming somewhere and it wasn't only on fan subs, but I'm not sure I'm going to rewatch that. So,
did you finish it or?
No.
Cuz I remember you were watching it and you and Justin would be talking about it every week, and then it kind of fell behind maybe because of work. And I don't know if you ever got back into it or not.
I got about 35 episodes in, and I really do mean to get back to it. I will get back to it.
Funny story, that was a place that was very common for people to stop back in the old VHS days, because that was a point close to where the translation back then had gone on delay or ceased. So, you know, I know exactly where you are in the story.
Yeah, I'll get back to it. I've been watching
it
more stuff.
It does get
lately.
Better. I mean, you know, it's
I was enjoying it. I was enjoying it. I think just with anything, even if you're really into a show, you can only watch so much before you start getting fatigued and you want something else in your diet, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's why I would say you don't try and watch too much of it at a time. That's a show that works good if you watch, you know, an episode or two a week.
That's what I was doing, yeah, one per week. I would watch one on Sundays. I'll get back to that at some point. All right, Lacuna Craft. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, although there are some points where you just get so caught up in it that you just burn through a lot. You know, I'm kind of manic depressive in that sense, I suppose.
Right. All right. Lacuna Craft wants to know, do you think Western co-productions of anime will take off, i.e. the Mass Effect thing, is a good thing for the industry?
It is absolutely a good thing for the industry. I think that's we need more projects like that.
Yeah.
More animes being made with an international audience in mind, I would say that's a good thing.
Especially if we're using popular properties that already have a built-in fan base, and you don't have to be an anime fan to be a Mass Effect fan who's also interested in an animated movie version of it.
Yeah, the only challenge to that is that you have to really bring your A game when you make these projects. You can't just make something that's just coasting
Highlander.
Along and just okay. Yeah, you know, whether it's Highlander, whether it's Batman Gotham Knight, Halo Legends, you know, these things needed to be better than what they were.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about, you know, I mentioned Iron Man. It's like Iron Man needed to be better. I mean, X-Men is the level that it needs to be at, I think. But I mean, if they make a Mass Effect anime and it is not good, the way that, you know, the Mass Effect novels aren't good and the Mass Effect comic books aren't good. Even
the Mass Effect, anything that's not the video game.
Anything that's not the game, which is mystifying to me because the same people write all of them. But if the Mass Effect anime is bad, that's a black eye on all of anime for a while. I mean, Dragon Age as well. I mean, that's a big hit. But Mass Effect is the one that they really got to be careful with as far as doing a bang-up job on that. So I do think there is a tremendous upside to having these co-productions based on popular franchises. They just need to satisfy people.
That's, correct me if I'm wrong, the three of us, all three of us are pretty big fans of Mass Effect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I have to admit, like, my big concern with the anime version is, and this doesn't really apply as much to Dragon Age, which I assume is coming out first, with Mass Effect, if Shepard's not in it, or any of my favorite characters from the games aren't in it, I'm not going to care.
Doesn't feel like Mass Effect.
I'm not going to care.
Is BioWare insists that all those projects outside of the games, Shepard can't be in it.
Right, because like, the games because are his they, story or
they
her
want
story.
They don't want there to be a canonical Shepard. Like, this is definitely the official Shepard. You know, they can maybe mention Shepard offhand, but they can't mention whether Shepard's a guy or a girl or the details of, like, what Shepard did because, you know, there's aspects to the Mass Effect story that would affect things. So that's a hurdle that they need to overcome, and I think they can overcome it if they focus on some of the more memorable side characters. Maybe
definitely
they've got stories that they've alluded to, things that we know have happened to these characters no matter what Shepard did. They could tell good stories with those.
Or right, they could even just come up with a really interesting new character. I mean, they can do it, so.
Yeah,
it
would be hard. For me, it's gotta have somebody from some kind
it's
of touchstone.
It's gotta have Garrus or Zaid.
It's gotta have at least something to connect it back to the original game, so.
And that's my concern. With Dragon Age, I'm really... first of all, I don't know if you guys played the second one.
Oh, God. My dad played the second one. You know, he's played more Dragon Age and Mass Effect than I have. And yeah, he's... people are disappointed in it. It could have been really, really great, and it's the combat's great, but you know the story and you
yeah.
know all that. No,
I like begrudgingly finished it, and the second one. It seems like they're trying to make a Shepard like character, but man, they botched the writing. And for the anime, I don't know what the hell they're gonna do because the characters from the first game, which were much more memorable and much better. Those are that all, you know, that's treated as it says in the title, it's an origin story. So they're not using any of that material moving forward. And I don't know. I don't know what the hell they're going to do. I'm worried that
the anime needs is another generic fantasy action.
Exactly. And that's my concern is that it's just going to be it's got the name Dragon Age on it, but it could also be called Panzer Dragoon or whatever. You know. Okay, we're in the home stretch. We're in the home stretch. V-Guy, his question boils down to, he's concerned that End of Evangelion hasn't been licensed, not only because it's too expensive, but the package, like, somehow they're forcing them to also license Death and Rebirth, and wants to know if that's what's prohibiting it from coming out here again.
Probably, just because we know Gainax, that's, like, their big property is Evangelion or Kara, whoever it is that owns Evangelion now. They got that one thing that they got to bank everything on. So, you know, if no one wants it for that money, then, it's not going to come out, regardless of how well it's sold in the past. I have my copies. it's not too hard to find still, you know.
Well, actually, it's pretty expensive.
It is? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's up to, like, it's if you want the manga box set that has End of Evangelion and Death and Rebirth in it, I think the price it hovers around 60-70 bucks.
Wow, that is crazy. I think I bought that on deep discount for like 10 or 13.
Yeah, well, and just End of Evangelion alone is like 30-40. So it's up there. But I don't want to speculate. I have no idea what the situation is with that license. Yes, I assume they're asking a lot of money. I don't know if any of the companies, I'm sure they've expressed interest. I have no idea. So we won't know until somebody decides to speak up about that. It's pointless to speculate. I would assume at some point Sentai tried.
Oh yeah.
And this will be our final question from Vince A. If 30 years of age is the otaku expiration date, how would you recommend you could create more fans?
This is kind of a in-jokey sort of question because what he's referring to is the fact that I often say that, you know, you don't usually see too many true blue otaku over the age of 30. Maybe they all die out. Maybe they all commit suicide by then. Who knows? Or are struck by a sudden illness. But, you know, the two things seem completely unrelated to what he's talking about. How do you create new fans versus how do you, you know, keep from going being a crazy otaku person? The answer is just to have, this is kind of a Japan question, like they need to make things that are more globally accessible, not just within that ultra niche target audience, things that'll just blindly almost accept whatever as long as it has what's in their database, as it were. You know, they got to kind of get back to what made them successful, which is, you know, science fiction, action adventure with some comedy elements to them. Those are traditionally what has always been the most successful in America and the rest of the world. if they get back on that train, and not saying eliminate the stuff they're making now, but not have it be the overwhelming majority, such that things like Tiger and Bunny are the gem, the diamond in the rough. If they kind of rebalance the scales a bit, you can make anime accessible again. You can make it kind of cool. I've seen it happen in my lifetime. There was that 5 years, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, where people kind of were thinking, you know, anime can be kind of cool. But they don't really make that anime for that sort of crowd anymore, or at least not nearly as often. That's why we're saying Tiger and Bunny, wow, they finally made another one. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who came in and thought stuff like Cowboy Bebop and Fruity Crewly and the Big O and Gundam Wing and all that stuff are awesome. And then they were like, well, what else?
Where do we go from here?
And Japan needs to have a definite answer for that. There needs to be like, well, there's all this stuff that you can watch now. And that's how you're going to make new fans and keep this thing going.
I agree. I have nothing to add. I think we're actually seeing a trend in the right direction, especially with Tiger and Bunny.
I am hopeful.
I also don't think that 30 is the expiration date.
It depends on how you define otaku, and I define it by the hardcore Japanese definition.
Oh, well then,
as
yes.
As opposed to the I'm a fan of Japanese pop culture and, you know, manga and anime, therefore I'm an otaku. No, I like the I'm a me mania from Perfect Blue. That's my kind of otaku.
Well, I think ultimately it sort of comes down to when you decide to grow up.
And yeah, maybe that's the expiration date, henceforth. You know, it's right. A spiritual death. You decided to move on or grow up. You know, you can still like anime, but, you know, not be a total psycho about it. Then you've expired.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Okay, guys. Well, listen, that should wrap it up. Thanks a lot for coming on and shooting the breeze. I appreciate it, guys. Always fun to talk to.
Yeah, great being here. As always, AnimeWorldOrder.com is our podcast. Check out Otaku USA Magazine. We also got the website OtakuUSAMagazine.com, which is home to not just myself, but also several of your favorite Anime News Network contributors and columnists. So do give those a shot.
And if we're at, you know, if we're doing any panels at cons you're at, please come to our panels. We appreciate that, too.
Okay.
And talk to us.
All right.
That's it. See you.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys. Okie doke, that's our show. Thanks to Daryl Saratkulb for joining me. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and while you're there, give us a rating or something, you know, a review, star rating, whatever you think of the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week.